This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on a Friday afternoon, the beginning of a long weekend. It is Friday, September 4th, 2020. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart, sitting in for Cisco Cotto today, and the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Labor Day weekend is expected to set the course for coronavirus this fall. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, the government jobs report for August is today's headliner. We're joined by Bob Brusk, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. We talked to you a couple hours ago about the kind of the headline numbers from the August jobs report. A little over a million people hired in the month of August. The unemployment rate around 8.4%. Both very positive numbers, especially for the people who got new jobs. But I want to divine a couple of trends that might be inside this report. And the first one is the number of people who were furloughed back in April or May as the pandemic began cycling through the population. The number of people who were furloughed, and there was some expectation that those jobs could be converted into permanent layoffs, but right now, the number of people coming back seem to be exceeding expectations.
Right. No, right now, this is a good number and better than expected. You know, certainly the unemployment rate at 8.4% is much lower than we had expected. In fact, initially when we saw how high the unemployment rate went, I expected at least it would still be double digits by the end of the year. So this is much better, much faster than what I thought. Now, of course, the Labor Department has admitted to miscounting the number unemployed, and the real unemployment rate is probably something right now that's just a little bit short of 10%. But setting those aside, dealing with the numbers that we have, there's been a good rebound. It's across the board, but we have had some reinfection, and as I continue to emphasize, the real impediment now to doing better going forward is going to be the unwillingness or the willingness to open industries that up to this point have remained closed or greatly impaired. You've got restaurants, you've got all kinds of leisure activities, you've got professional sports, you've got movie theaters. There are all kinds of businesses that are basically, running like a three-legged race, and you can't put somebody running with a three-legged race next to an Olympic sprinter and expect the race to be fair.
And also, one of the things that really kind of helped in this jobs report, at least, was the number of census workers who were hired to conduct the count this year.
Yes. That's kind of cheating. But that happens every 4 years, and we know we had the census effect. And it's part of the numbers, and those people do get absorbed, and that's a good thing, and it's not a permanent job, but it's something, and it helps for now. But I think the important thing to recognize is that we couldn't keep adding jobs at that same early pace. That was definitely going to slow. That the slowing is kind of a function of some natural atrophy. It's also a function of our need to open up some industries that can begin to hire, not just getting industries that already open up to full speed. Some of them will not go to full speed until the other industries open. So it's a complicated wheel within a wheel arrangement where industries depend on one another, and we really need to open the economy if we really want to get job growth back to 100% of where it was.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Bob Brusca, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Coming up, the COVID challenge posed by the long holiday weekend.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
What happens this weekend, this long Labor Day weekend, will have a major impact on the future of the COVID-19 crisis in the U.S. We welcome in Michelle Cortez, health reporter, Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, welcome back to the program. You can set your watch to this cycle, and that means by Monday afternoon or perhaps Tuesday morning, our social media feeds will be awash with video of people having a big pool party or some sort of large gathering somewhere in this country that is an indication that people did not abide by social distancing rules over the long holiday weekend, and that could potentially be an accelerator of COVID. This latest, the wave that we're coming off of, the one that began in July, could that be traced to the 4th of July weekend?
Absolutely. We have seen it holiday after holiday. We saw people gathering for Memorial Day and then a surge of cases. We saw it over the 4th of July, a surge of cases. We're now hearing about the cases and deaths that were associated with the Sturgis motorcycle rally. Public health officials are really reaching out and saying, hey, listen, you really do not want to start giving some kind of fuel to this virus, which is still circulating, still at accelerated levels, much higher than it was earlier in the year. And we're going into the fall and the winter. Don't give it any more fuel. Make sure to keep your distance. Don't participate in the parties.
Is there some concern amongst epidemiologists that you've already seen COVID cases surging on college campuses, especially on college campuses where there have been a lot of student parties over the last 2 or 3 weeks? Is there concern that you take those college party goers and then send them all home for the weekend or send them off campus for the weekend, that this could really, you talk about fuel, this could be kind of like spraying jet fuel on a campfire?
We are absolutely hearing that college students who are sick should not be going home to their parents and their families for the long weekend or even just to recuperate. You know, if they are not feeling well, they should be staying at their college campuses and recovering there, isolating as best they can and not spreading the disease around the country. But also to your point, absolutely, we are seeing there's some that at Iowa State, a quarter of the tests are coming back positive, meaning that the amount of virus circulating there is just astronomical. And the students haven't all really gotten back and gotten into the partying scene. It's still early days. So if that trend continues and people start getting out more, circulating more, penetrating into those local communities, and heaven forbid, bringing it home to wherever they came from, that also is going to be an accelerant.
On the vaccine front, it seems like the consensus is starting to emerge, you know, that the COVID vaccine is not an if, and it's going to be a when. And the World Health Organization is saying that when will be middle of next year.
There is definitely a difference between what we're hearing in the United States and what the World Health Organization is saying to everybody else. In the U.S., we're definitely taking an optimistic approach that the idea is that a vaccine might be available as soon as early November, and they're trying to get everything lined up to start distribution and inoculations with that. At the World Health Organization, they're saying, look, even if something does become available, it's not going to get any kind of widespread use until the middle of next year, maybe even the third quarter. So that's looking at fall. So to a certain extent, WHO talks to the world and the United States. They put those ducks in order and they want to get it out to people as soon as they possibly can. That is part of, first world. Everybody here wants to make sure that in the U.S. we get virus the vaccine first. Maybe that's going to play out. But broadly speaking, we're not going to see a vaccine until the middle of next year.
Thanks a lot, Michelle Cortez, health reporter, Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Coming up next, a check of gas prices for the Labor Day weekend.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Travelers hitting the road this holiday weekend won't be taking a big hit at the gas pump. Let's get the latest now from Patrick DeHaan, senior petroleum analyst, GasBuddy.com, based in Chicago. Patrick, you did the numbers, and as we're heading into yet another presidential election season, gas prices haven't been this low since another presidential election year. Which one was it?
Well, it's been a long time, all the way back to 2004. nationwide. Here in Illinois, we're right on the fringe of breaking through 2016's Labor Day price. We may make it. If we go beyond that, it'll be 2004 here as well. Overall, a very cheap and stable summer at the pump, and we're closing out again with some of the lowest prices and potentially lower prices beyond Labor Day.
You know, it used to be a couple of months ago talking about the the record low gas prices, or gas prices that we had not seen in quite some time. It was because everyone had decided to shelter in place at home. People were working from home. No one was on the expressways and tollways. I could tell you from my own personal experience last night that the Kennedy had old time traffic from downtown to O'Hare. So people are clearly back on the road. So is this a function of the supply glut, or are we back to fracking and the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia?
Well, you know, Rob, I share with your disappointment there that the Kennedy seems to be back to its rush hour levels. But looking closely, it's maybe not quite there. That's what we're seeing nationally. Gasoline demand still about 15% lower year on year. So traffic counts seem like they're awful, but still, within that, about 15% lower demand, and that's why prices are still quite a bit lower. Call it about 25 cents lower than last year.
And then when it comes to when, you know, once there's a vaccine and once the economy, you know, returns to a more of a traditional footing, maybe not normal, but back to what we were used to perhaps last year or at the beginning of this year, you're still going to have probably a lot of trucks off the road. You're probably going to have a lot of people still working from home. So is this kind of lower, you know, early 21st century style of gas price, is this to be expected for a while?
I think so. You know, we've made the easy recovery in gasoline demand. We've seen it already. To get the rest of the 10 or 15% that we're struggling with to get back to year ago levels, I think it's going to be monumental to get there, if we even do, because like you cite, a lot of behavioral changes taking place, you know, a lot of working from home happening, a lot of behavioral changes that will not make it easy for us to get back to those previous demand levels.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst, GasBuddy.com, based in Chicago. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, operating a personal fitness business in a COVID environment.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart for Cisco Coto, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Chicago Police Superintendent David Brown discussing the department's plan for the holiday weekend.
This is Mike Krauser. Navy Pier has not rebounded since reopening in June, and the holiday weekend will be the last for the foreseeable future.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. We learn how a personal fitness trainer is adapting to the restrictions of the coronavirus. As restaurants try to attract business during the pandemic, a new survey identifies what customers need and expect. Business, the Dow is down 387 points. The NASDAQ is down 340. The S&P 500 is down 63. AccuWeather says mostly sunny and nice today. Breezy this afternoon. A high of 79. It's 73 degrees right now in Chicago. At 12:31, Police Superintendent David Brown says nearly 8,000 officers will be added to the Chicago streets this weekend for Labor Day. He says along with fighting crime, officers need to have each other's backs.
We've had over now 58 officers shot at this year, 10 actually shot of that 58. That's unprecedented. That's an unprecedented number of officers shot at and shot. There's no number that's comparative to that in recent memory from anyone.
Days off are canceled this weekend. Shifts are extended from 8 to 12 hours. Pandemic struggles mean the Labor Day weekend will mark the end of the year for Navy Pier.
The pier was shut down along with everything else in mid-March and opened again in June with few visitors since then. Attendance has been down by 80%. There was $60 million in revenue at the pier last year and a projected deficit of $20 million this year. More than 70 businesses at the pier will be shutting down after Monday, and outdoor areas will also be closed. Mike Krauser, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
If you're working remotely or anytime you're home, just ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments. It's 12:32 on the Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are sliding today. We're joined by Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital, based in Chicago. Jack, welcome back to the program. Except for a little bit of a pop at the open this morning, it seems the markets are continuing their slide aside from yesterday? Is it still this end of the season profit taking going on?
Yeah, I think it's some profit taking. I also actually think underneath the surface, it's good news that's prompting some of this selling, quite frankly. If you think about the names that have really been hit hard in the sell-off over the last couple of days, they've been these, you know, go-go tech names that investors have been latching on to because they know that these companies will be making money through thick and thin no matter what happens with the pandemic. And I noticed that yesterday, just after the CDC announced a target date of November 1st for the vaccine, you know, whether, you know, people take that seriously or not, investors may have latched on to that. And I think that's where that's started to prompt the sell-off on the way down. But one of the things I noticed that for as poorly as, you know, Apple and Tesla and Amazon had done on the downside, investors were clamoring for cruise ship stocks. I mean, the Norwegian Cruise Line, Carnival, they were up 8% yesterday. And the bond market, which is usually a good indicator of which way investors think direction of the economy is going, those yields were actually higher. So I think this is maybe investors are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel in the economy, and they're starting to rebalance portfolios accordingly.
Well, I mean, November 1st was the date set by the CDC to at least get the infrastructure ready for distribution because it would take a long time. But it also kind of reflects the fact that over the last couple of months, the language surrounding the vaccine has gone from an if to a when. It's not an if it will work or if it's going to happen. It's turning into a when it's going to happen and when it's going to be introduced. And even if it's the middle of next year, as you said, investors now know the destination.
Yeah, I think there's a certain degree of certainty around the uncertainty that we've been grappling with. And I expect that, we will see a rebalance. And so what happens is if you sell, you know, the largest companies and buy the smallest companies, the overall index is going to show declines because obviously the largest companies have the biggest share of the index. So, you got to look what's going on underneath the surface. And as long as I see the banks and a lot of the, you know, what we'll call pro-cyclical companies do well and the bond market yields rising incrementally, that suggests to me that, you know, investors are looking more for economic recovery than they are for kind of this pandemic depression.
If you are looking to get in on some stocks that maybe at their nadir because of either they were entertainment or travel or they were really hit hard by closures over the summer and you're trying to take advantage of the rebound next year, is it too late to get in?
I don't think so. I think that there's still opportunity in a lot of those down and out names. I mean, take, for example, air travel, okay? There's an enormous split. If air freight companies are up 40 to 50% from the pre-COVID peak, and air transportation passenger companies are down 40 to 50% from the pre-COVID peak. So there is certainly an opportunity. The key, though, and that's anyone who buys a share of stock has to believe that those companies' balance sheets are strong enough to sustain them through the recovery and that they will be a going concern. So that is something you really do have to pay attention to.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital, based in Chicago. Coming up next, an Entrepreneur Friday, taking personal training to the safety of the great outdoors.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour, and today we meet the Chicago franchisee for a company that offers in-person fitness training for both individuals and groups. We welcome in Viraj Kamdar, fitness entrepreneur and the Chicago franchise owner of Gym Guys, and that's Guy with a Z. Viraj, welcome to the program. And the pandemic has forced a lot of people who are personal trainers, you know, just because gyms were closed, workout studios were closed for so long, to get creative. What have you been doing to keep your franchise going throughout the course of the pandemic?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. in terms of the pandemic, we've basically broken it out into three different phases. As Illinois has been progressing from phase one, two, three onto phase four, our approach has kind of varied. So within the first three phases of the pandemic, we've also been moving to more of a virtual solution. So our coaches, we will drop off any type of fitness equipment our clients would need for their personal training sessions right to their homes. So they're getting sanitized fitness equipment. And then we'll hop on live Zoom calls to conduct their ongoing sessions. Outside of that, we've been offering free live Facebook Live workouts every Friday. So other clients and, you know, potential people who are interested in Gym Guys get a chance to experience us firsthand. So we've been moving to more of a virtual solution. As we moved into phase four of the reopening plan, we've resumed in-person training sessions, but we've been, you know, really focusing on making sure all of our coaches wear the appropriate PPE, and we definitely exceed the standards set by the CDC and PHAC. So all of our clients get a safe and reliable workout solution.
And some of these phase four workouts take place outside, socially distanced, in parks.
Exactly. So actually the other day we were training a group of nurses from Northwestern Hospital right in Lakeshore Park. So we'll go ahead and set up all the equipment, make sure it's about 6 feet apart, and we bring everything right to our clients. So you're talking about your kettlebells, your dumbbells, BOSU, you know, fun battle ropes, TRX. So they get a really fun experience and enjoy the Chicago weather.
The how prevalent was virtual workout instruction prior to the pandemic? And is that something that's going to stick once it's over?
Absolutely. So before the pandemic, we didn't have as much need for the virtual solution. But, you know, ever since, you know, we've realized that some clients, they prefer the virtual solution. Everyone has different appetites during this pandemic of their comfort level. So we absolutely have some clients that will continue virtual. We'll be basically dropping off the equipment they would need for all their trainings right to their homes. So even our clients who don't have any equipment at home can enjoy a full Gym Guys workout. So you're not just doing body weight squats and things of that sort.
And how long are your outdoor workouts going to continue? Because you do see people who got to have their outdoor, they got to get that outdoor jog in on the January day where it's 10 below zero. Do you see yourself leading a class of hearty workout people on a December morning outside?
Absolutely. You know, if people are interested in working out outside, you know, we will definitely be there. We train in all kinds of weather. Of course, if it's inclement weather, you know, raining or, you know, snowing, we would move those sessions to, you know, an indoor location. But besides that, you know, we love training outdoors. We'll bundle up and we'll get to work.
All right, Viraj. Viraj Kamdar, fitness entrepreneur and Chicago franchise owner of Gym Guys. That's Gym Guys with a Z. He is our entrepreneur this Friday. Still to come, helping restaurants identify the wants and needs of customers.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A survey commissioned by the guest experience platform Seven Rooms identifies what restaurant customers are looking for as they dine out during the pandemic. Let's discuss the results with Doug Roth, the founder and president of Playground Hospitality based in Chicago. Doug, welcome back to the program. And the four categories kind of run the gamut from the person who will not go into a restaurant, but they will get takeout frequently, two differing degrees of the safety conscious diner, and then one that wants to throw all caution to the wind and party like it's February of 2020. As a restaurant owner, how do you accommodate these four very different types of customers?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's difficult actually to accommodate everyone's needs at this point. And I think that what you need to do is really sort of concentrate on specific areas. And that would mean, for instance, carry out delivery and be really honed in on that. Because at this juncture, you do have quite a few fears. You were mentioning the four different types of individuals. And one is the pickup patron, for instance. And the pickup patron, only 25% of individuals at this point are comfortable picking up food. Hopefully that will increase. What's even more concerning is how many people are really interested in sitting indoors. At this point, only 27% are interested in sitting inside of a restaurant. So you really have to be able to sort of pick and choose at this juncture and figure out really the best way to maximize your profitability.
And there are two categories of diners, the safety savvy consumer and the tech conscious contactless diner. And the safety savvy consumer is one who wants the barriers between tables and real serious rearrangement of the physical facilities to make sure that social distancing and the indoor dining experience is as safe as possible. Some restaurants have tried that or done the best they could. And then the contactless diner, they want everything to be done online ahead of time so you're not touching anything or hanging around before your seating experience.
Right. And both of those can get costly. You were talking about the safety savvy guest. Well, in addition to that, they want sanitizers. They want the food to be covered. And one thing that is very important now, more than anything for most guests, is the filtration system. Hey, do you have HEPA filters? And if so, when were they put in? And because I think that the concern is that most restaurants are covering the area of contact and are not as concerned about contracting the virus that way, but more through the air particles. And so in that sort of context, like flying, that you want to be able to feel that they are doing everything possible to filter the air. And that, again, can get very expensive.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Doug Roth, founder and president of Playground Hospitality, based in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function. Works both online and with the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.